Welcome to the Rockin' Life podcast. And today we have Tiercy, and we had an interview a couple of years ago. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you again for asking me. That was so much fun way back then. It has been a long time.
Yeah, it was actually just over 2 years ago. And then we did another interview when you interviewed me. I guess we're going to have to go back to that as well here one of these days.
Yes, for sure.
I got to know you through a Facebook group about divorce. And this podcast is about helping other people succeed in divorce. And both you and I know it can be extremely difficult. For me, it was the most difficult period in my whole life. But time goes. It's now about 7 years ago, and I am living the best life I've ever been. I've never felt better about myself, and especially my own growth during this period of time. And that's something that I chose to do. A lot of people go downward in a spiral and never end up getting back up above the water and keep staying down there. And that's what I want this podcast to be that catalyst for people to kind of like wake up and kind of like see the possibility to have an amazing life even after divorce. So I just wanted to get an update first. How is everything going?
Oh, it's great. I love the whole purpose of your podcast. I think it's such an important message. For me, I've had a lot happen. Let's see, I've moved. I think I've had a job promotion, dating someone, and I've been through breakups, and now I'm dating someone again, and life keeps moving. That's what is really interesting. There's been a whole lot of distance, puts a lot of things in perspective. It's been about 6 years for me since my divorce. It's quite a long time, and it feels very different than even the last 2 years ago that we talked. And I was trying to create my best life then, and I'm still doing it now.
Yeah. Do you remember what the headline of your first podcast was?
Creating the life I love.
Yeah, exactly. And rewriting your story and your ending.
Yes. Yes, so true. I mean, we do get to determine our lives, and that's the beautiful thing about it. There's so much out of our control, but there's a lot that we can do to write an amazing story.
Yeah, it's a choice. And first, I wanted to see, what choices did you make to kind of like have that catalyst to turn your life around into an amazing life versus going downward in a vicious spiral?
Well,
can you identify any points in this journey?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if you're looking for concrete things, but you hit the nail on the head. It is a choice. It is 100% choices you make, and it isn't about like where you work, what you eat, what you wear. It's more, what's my attitude going to be? How am I going to think about this? I need to reframe this. I can't think of this. For me, it's that suffering versus reality, right? I could have sat in suffering about my divorce, and who would have blamed me, right? I was blindsided, then was treated horribly with a lot of trauma from the way I was treated by my ex. I could sit in that. And yeah, that was really hard, but I knew I wanted a great life. I didn't want to sit in that suffering because I didn't want to ruminate, like you said, that downward spiral. And I get how that happens so easily because it's hard to rise above that sometimes. And it's hard to choose divorce. Like, that's the one thing I kept saying to myself, I have to choose this because that was the reality. I did not have any other choice but to choose divorce. And to say it shouldn't have happened was only hurting me. It did happen. So now what? And so if I sit there and fight that reality, I'm in suffering. So like, this is a really simple example of what I mean to put it into practice. I do not like hot, and living in Utah, it is so dang hot here in the summer. And I remember getting into the cars in the summertime. I'm like, oh my God, it's so hot. It's miserable. Let's get the AC on as soon as possible. Right. I mean, it would be the first thing I would say to my husband when we got in the car, let's get the AC on. And I remember a friend of mine, she was from Vegas, and we were talking one day. She's like, don't you just love the heat when you get into the car? And I'm like, no. But then I was like, wait, you mean people love that? And the reality is, I live in Utah. Well, it's always hot in the summer. The car's always going to be hot. So the reality is, the car's going to be hot. I can learn to embrace that or I can suffer through it, right? So I'm like, I am going to love the hot car when I get in it. And now I will literally take a moment and be like, oh my gosh, this heat feels amazing. Okay, now I'm going to get the AC on, right? Like I don't revel in it for hours, you know, but I now embrace that heat when I get in because I don't really have any other choice.
Yeah. And it's a mindset, mm-hmm. how you embrace difficulties. You know, even yes. though if you don't like it, you can decide to see the 10% good in something versus mm-hmm. to always focus on the negative.
Correct.
Situation.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
You can turn something negative into something positive.
Absolutely. Like that simple thing with the heat. And the thing is, if you fight against that reality, you will lose 100% of the time. So I could get in the car and just be miserable every single time. But I'm like, I don't want that in my life. People can actually embrace this. I'm going to embrace this. So, I mean, it's great, you know, and I had to do the same thing with divorce. I didn't want it, but here I am. And man, have I lived my best life. I say that with a little bit of hesitation because there's still been pain and loss from the divorce, right? Like that loss does not go away. So I don't want anyone to think life is perfect. There's days where it's still hard. I can't remember what had happened, but the guy that I'm dating now walked into my house and I just fell in his arms. I'm like crying. And I'm like, I hate divorce. I'd had a fight with my daughter about it. And I'm like, I hate divorce. And he held me, he's divorced. And he's like, I know. And he just made me feel seen and heard. And it was really a beautiful moment for he and I. He understands, but just to have that was really great. So there's still times where I'm like, God, I hate divorce, even though I've chosen it. But the thing is I don't suffer over it. I acknowledge it. I acknowledge it to him. And then it was like, we had that great moment. And then I moved on with our day. Like it doesn't linger even in the back of my mind anymore. It's like, I expressed it. I processed it, got it out. And now I can go live my best life. Yeah. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah. And how would you commented about suffering and the suffering is optional. How would you describe that, or how would you handle that?
The suffering. So I think ruminating is suffering, right? When you're in the what could have been if I'd done this differently. Like if you sit in that, that's where you're ruminating, that's where suffering is. I do think it is healthy to reflect on, okay, here's my part. Even though it was a blindside with my ex-husband, you know, there were things that I knew I have to look at what I contributed to the demise of my marriage. Otherwise, I'm going to keep making those same mistakes. Because of the relationship I have with him, I'm not 100% sure I've landed on the right thing. We don't talk at all, but at least I'm trying. And I'm like, okay, this is what I think. This is what I've learned. And wow, I wish I had known that in my marriage. Now, I don't punish myself for not having known that then. I just am like, wow, look at what I know now. And I apply it to the relationships that I've had post-divorce, right? And so suffering, it's hard. I don't know if we're wired for it to stay there, but it is hard. And it does take a conscious effort to be like, no, I'm not going to punish myself for what I didn't know. It's a conscious thought for sure.
So when you say ruminating, would that be the same as living in the past?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And just absolutely living in the past, not accepting what is, not accepting you're divorced. Your thoughts are different when you accept it finally. I think I remember in one of the very early podcasts, I used to say like, I had gotten a flat tire on the way to work. And I was like, if I wasn't divorced, this wouldn't have happened, right? Because I wouldn't have been working. I'd been a stay-at-home mom. But the truth is, it's just a flat tire. But yeah. I'm not ruminating and living in the past and not fighting against the divorce. Nothing in my life now is about the divorce, except for issues that really are like, hey, this, you know what I mean? Like me getting a flat tire on the way to work, not about my divorce. Me, you know, whatever is happening in my life, it's just about what I'm creating. It took me a long time to get out of that phase. Again, I do think part of it was the way it was treated, but, and that's okay. I always knew where I wanted to go and where I wanted to get. And that was the important part, was I know where I want to go. Right now, I'm not quite sure how to get there. I wasn't able or ready to make that choice of embracing divorce yet. But
so living in the past and processed the issues then, I guess? that you have had time to deal with it? Because I think people living in the past are dealing with a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression, etc. And I'll throw in the plug here. I teach a course about being present. It's a type of short meditations daily.
Oh, cool.
And to really learn how to get out of the mode of living in the past or being afraid of the future.
Absolutely.
Being able to click out like that anytime and just being present. That's truly an amazing tool to be able to do that. And I think a lot of people struggle with that, to be able to truly be present. And that can be in a conversation like you and I. Let's say you have two friends talking, and somehow you start thinking about what you're going to say next instead of thinking about what you're saying. Or maybe you're thinking about something totally different. You're not being present.
Yes, I agree. Being present is a skill that I feel like we've lost with the distraction of iPhones and TVs and pets and, you know, all the noise and static in the world. The ability to be present has been lost. I have to make a concerted effort. Like, my kids are like, "Mom, you're not present with us. You're always on your phone." And I'm like, "Oh." And so I have actually tried, it's one of the things when they're around, I really try to put my phone away now. For me, unfortunately, that means like I've got to put it in another room sometimes, because it's so easy to just be like picking it up and looking. But, you know, I get distracted, especially as I'm connected to so many singles groups and friends. And so, yeah, being present, even present on dates, present at work. My boss one day was like, "You're a little distracted recently." And I'm like, "Yeah, I've been planning a trip." So I have been, and he called me on the carpet, and I was like, "Yep, he's completely right. I need to be better." And so, it was starting to impact me a little bit at work. There were some other things going on. It was starting to impact me a little bit. I'm like, yeah, I do need to be present. So it is definitely something I work on. I've heard, like, and maybe you know, as you teach this, identifying what your senses see, smell, taste, touch is a way to help you stay in the present. So a lot of times I'll start rubbing my legs to try and keep me in the present.
Yeah, that's exactly the tools that we teach on this training. It's a 6-week training.
Oh, wow.
And anybody listening can click on the link below and get more information. You know, I have the course start once a month. But for example, you can just take your fingers and rub them and think about the tension between the fingers. That's a super simple practice. And the thing is, to learning how to be present is something that you have to practice. It's a skill, and you really need to, until you start getting to understand it and learn it, it's like any skills, it takes practice. Kind of like going to the gym is how I say it. So you do it, practice in this training 3-4 times a day, just for a couple of minutes, and to learn how to click out of the busyness and fears and depression, divorce, whatever you're thinking about, and just thinking about the now. And breathing exercise is a great way. Or if you're out walking the dog, just smell, like you said, smell or look at the flowers, enjoying the environment. It's super important to be able to. And also, you're going to get so much out of relationships if you can be present, if you can really listen to people instead of thinking about what you're going to say next.
Yeah, I do like that. It's really important. And listening to understand helps, right? Rather than listening to respond. How much are we on our phones when a person's sitting right beside you? And you're like, "Hey, I'm on a date with you. I don't want you to be on your phone," or something like that, right? Like, I came to be here with you. Unless we have the understanding of, like, I went to my friend's house to work the other day, and I knew she was going to be on her computer. I was going to be on mine. And that was fine, right? We knew that's what was going to happen. But if we'd been there to just chat and interact and build our friendship, me being on my computer would have not been okay.
Yeah. And that's disrespectful too. When I'm out on a date with my girlfriend, I turn the phone off or I put it in airplane mode if you go out for dinner.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
I don't have things that are so important that people need to reach me. I've turned off most notifications on my phone. Facebook is turned off. And many of these apps, I don't even have on my phone. So like, I can always get access to the, for example, email, et cetera, via the computer. So
sure. And I think in dating and being present is so important. And I love that you said it's like going to the gym. It's building that muscle, learning how, and not beating yourself up when you didn't do it right. But okay, next time I'm going to do better. And it's been really great. Like, I have done that more with my children, and it's been really fun.
Another thing that we chatted a little bit about before we started the recording was something you're a little bit emotional about, abandonment issues with the kids. And when we talked about it, it was something I felt that you were very, it was a very difficult thing.
Yeah.
And I can see that now too. It's like, I want to bring up things that are difficult when you go through a divorce and let other people hear it and see, okay, what did I do, or could I have done anything different?
Yeah, I don't mind talking about it. So for those who are listening, blindsided by the divorce, I had been a stay-at-home mom my whole life. Like, as I had a therapist who said, he goes, "You're really numb." Like, this is a year later. He's like, "I just feel like you're numb." He's like, "Not only were you pushed down the stairs, I feel like the carpet was ripped out from under you. And then you got pushed down the stairs." I'm like, "Yeah, that's how I feel." So I was in extreme amount of pain. Like, suicidal ideation was very present for me. And I process out here, and I'm a talker, and you can't talk to your kids about it, right? That's what all the experts say. So I would go out with my friends. They had their own families. I don't know how much I went out. I wish I could remember, but I know I went out a couple times a night with them. But for my kids, who were used to having me around all the time, and now I'm working, they felt abandoned by me. It came up that they felt abandoned by me. And I wanted to yell at them, like, "Are you kidding me? I was trying to survive and live. And because I did that, I'm here now." But the reality is, they have their own experience about the divorce, and I have to validate that. And it's been really hard for me. I sit here and say it because I know it's what I need to do, but it's been really hard for me. But when your 21-year-old son, who is so stoic and wise and smart, is sobbing in your arms, saying he felt abandoned, it's just hard not to just be like, "Oh my God, I did this to you." And I can only change it and fix it as I can take accountability. And I'm like, "I understand you feel that way. Yes, I have my own side and perspective and why, but you feel that way, and let's move forward. I don't want you to feel that way again. Like, how can we fix this? How can we work on this?" And that was where the present thing came up. "Well, I just need to be more present with me when you're with me." Okay. And it's so frustrating because I feel like my ex made this decision that impacted our family in such a colossal negative way. And to me, it seems like he's getting off scot-free. Is he? I don't really know. It's really hard for me because it seems very unfair, but life's unfair. And the reality is, I hurt my children. Could I have done anything differently? I don't know. I did the best with what I could at the time. I wish they had come to me then. They didn't. I only found this out about 6 to 8 months ago. They're children, and I, as their mom, I need to teach them and show them, you know, yeah, moms make mistakes, and here's how you take accountability for something. And I hate that they feel that way. I hate it so much. In that, I don't want my kids to ever feel that way. And then I hate it because I feel like it's so unfair. So there's two ways, right? But abandonment's a huge thing for people, right? That might be their childhood wound that they have going into their next, you know, into their grown up. And it might be because of me. And that's hard to know. But, you know, we're kind of getting into attachment theory and things like that, but on how things can play out.
But do you think your relationship with your kids will be stronger by you being able to talk to your oldest son about this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a beautiful discussion. I mean, when we had it, it hurt for me, but I had to be present and let him share because I needed to be a safe place for him. I know I've not always been a safe place sometimes, especially around the divorce. It's still a sensitive topic for me with my children. Well, two of my children. And so I had to let him just say what he wanted to say. And it's hard to hear this because I'm like, "Don't you know what I've done for you? Don't you understand all the things I've done? And I'm doing this and I've done that. And don't you know?" But they don't know. They have their own experience. And it's so hard to hear. But yeah, he and I have grown closer because he was willing to share that with me. And now we check in and he's like, "Mom," he's like, "I see you're making effort." And he's like, "I recognize it." And my kids are actually very emotionally intelligent. And it was really nice to hear that. And he's like, "You know, just thank you." And I was like, "Well, thanks for sharing that with me. It was very hard to hear."
I think it's awesome because especially boys, they have a harder time, I think, a lot of times to share. And there's a lot of peer pressure. You're supposed to act certain ways. And for example, when I grew up, I never talked about feelings with my mom and dad. Very seldom, especially my dad. Both my parents were wonderful, spending a lot of time, but talking about feelings and getting hurt is not something that we talked about. And having having the courage to come up to you and say this is awesome because he obviously feels safe to go to you and talk about it. Yeah. So, and also that you are listening and hearing him out.
I think the important thing is one of the things that I've tried to teach my kids that my mom taught me. Conflict is inevitable. When you're building a life with someone, when you live with someone, you will have conflict. It is just going to happen, right? And so what I've tried to teach my kids is it can actually bring you closer. It can build connection because you've worked something out. You felt safe. You felt heard. You felt listened to. My younger son who lives with me, he and I have very similar conflict resolution styles. Like we can just get each other. And he knows how to de-escalate me. I know how to de-escalate him. And it's actually a really beautiful thing and something I look for in a partner, right? Like that it's called co-regulation and it is beautiful. If I can share, like,
yeah.
So what this looks like with my boyfriend now, we were going to a concert this summer and I had purchased the tickets. There were four tickets. Three of us had gone out to eat for dinner and I was trying to transfer the fourth ticket to my friend so she could get into the concert venue because we were already going to go in. And he was sitting beside me and I looked at my friend across from me and I'm like, this is when I get frustrated. Technology never works for me. Well, in the past, I would have been judged for that and like, get it together, just make it work, right? Well, he and I had enough conversation about co-regulation and physical touch that I just felt him reach over and start rubbing my back because he knows touch is a calming thing for me.
Yeah.
And he's like, we can figure it out. And it was like, he made it a we, and I was able to get myself like, cause inside I was a bundle of nerves. Like, oh, this isn't working. Like outside, I was trying to stay calm because it wasn't anything really worth getting upset about, but it wasn't working. So I was able to, his touch calmed me and I was able to be like, okay, what do I need to do? And then I was like, okay, I think I had to close the app and reopen. I can't remember what I needed to do, but because I didn't get judged for it, instead it was understanding and, oh, my partner's in distress. I want to help her. That's what happened. And I was able to get the ticket sent. We moved on our day and it wasn't a big deal. Right. And it was very beautiful for me that moment. I'm like, wow, that I never got that in my marriage. That's incredible.
So how do you do that with your, with your son? You said you and your son do the same.
Yeah, we do the same. I don't know if I shared this story before, but he burst into my room. I was sleeping and he burst into my room. And to me, it felt like my door slammed and it was so loud. And I'm like, he's like, mom, I messed up. I'm like, okay, wait. I go, what happened? And he's like, cause I thought he killed someone the way he was talking. Cause it was like midnight. And he's like, I have a flat tire. And I'm like, oh, okay. You have a flat tire. I'm like, I'm going to hug you. And he's like, okay. So I hugged him. And in our culture, we don't hug very long, but I hugged him until I felt that release in his body.
Yeah.
And touch calms him as well. And then he's like, and I looked at him and I said, okay, look, you have a flat tire. It's something we need to handle, but right now is not the time. So you go to sleep. I will be home to help you by 10:30 tomorrow morning, but before you're probably even awake, and we will get this handled. And he's like, okay, you're going to help me? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to help you. And he's like, okay. So there will be times now in the middle of a conflict where we're like, pause. Can I hug you? Yes, you can. Because he gets regulated by touch. I get it. And I love that. Like with my daughter, it looks very different because she doesn't want to be touched. So she and I, it sounds really funny, but we have a safe word that when we're getting heated, it's like, we say this word, it's marshmallow, and we just stop. And it's like, we know that that means we just need to calm down for a minute. And then after we say that word, sometimes we'll be like, you know what? Okay, we can continue discussing this, or hey, let's take a break. We'll come back to it tomorrow, right? Because that's co-regulating each other. And it is what healthy couples do. It's not codependent. It's what healthy couples do when they see their person in distress.
That's also respecting each other that, you know, right now just can't deal with this right now, but right. that you also say that, you know, I will come back to you in a few hours, but right now I need some time to just process what's going on. I just need some time to think.
Yes, exactly. And lots of people are like that. Leaving something unresolved is very challenging for me. Like, it's super hard. I'm a fixer and I just want to fix it. But sometimes when I'm in that lizard brain, I still want to fix it, but I don't have the capability because I'm all up in my emotions. So taking that break is super important. And like my boyfriend and I just went through this the other day. I'd asked him some questions. I was like, I showed up in curiosity. I'm like, hey, there's something I need to learn about you. I have some questions for you. And at first I got his buy into the conversation. I'm like, do you want me to do it through text? Do you want me to call you? You know, if I do it through text, then you can think about it, or I can call you right now. And he's like, well, why don't you do it through text? And then I'll think about it. And then we'll talk about it. And I'm like, perfect. And then we were talking and I had asked something else. And he's like, hey, is it okay if I take time to think about this and I get back to you? I'm like, absolutely. Now, the thing is I trust him to come back to me, and he did. I'll come back to you tomorrow. But you can't use it as a stonewalling tactic, right? Like, no. That's not what you or I are saying at all. It's not a stonewalling. I don't want to address it. So I'm just going to ask for this break. No, it's, I legit need time to think about an answer because I want it to be, you know, authentic answer. And so you take that time and you come back, and it is about either, what was it you said? Like, I can't remember what percentage of conflict actually isn't resolvable, but it's coming.
A large percentage. I think it's like over 50%.
Yeah, I think it's like 70 or 80. It's really large. So it's either going, hey, we need to feel heard, or let's come back to this and come up with a resolution. And so taking that time and that break is, I have learned, is imperative to positive conflict resolution.
Yeah, and also being okay that it's not, you know, you have one view and I have a different view, and respect that we have a different view. We don't have to have the same view of things. Just being acceptance of somebody else's view.
Yeah, and I think that's been the biggest primary thing I could have learned since my divorce. I didn't realize there is one event can cause two equally different, very valid responses in different people.
Yeah.
So like that, knowing that is imperative. I still have my perspective. I still have my needs. I still have my wants, but sometimes understanding their perspective, their side, I'm like, oh, okay. And it helps you go, this isn't really a personal thing or whatever it is. Okay. I understand why you did that. Cool. It just helps so much knowing one event can create two equally valid different responses.
Yeah, absolutely. So dating, that's awesome. We also talked about attachment styles on one of the podcasts. Do you have any more clues about detachment styles since you started to date now for over 6 months?
When I started dating the guy that I'm dating, I really had the feeling like, you're going to have to work within his attachment style. I don't know where it came from. I'm like, I know this. And so we've had several conversations about it and working in it. Like, I'm a secure leaning with anxious attachment. He's avoidant, but knowing that and what behaviors affects each other is super important. And so recognizing like, oh, this is a push away, right? Because avoidants don't like that. They're not comfortable with that intimacy or connection. And so, but everyone wants it. That's the thing. And I hate labels. And I'm like, I'm not trying to label you. I'm trying to understand better how you are. Like, attachment style can be fluid. I think that's also important to recognize. And we all want to move towards that secure. And so I don't typically like labels, but it does help you understand. And so knowing the different behaviors. So like sometimes I can get a little anxious. Not about text, but so just for people who may not know, like if I'm secure and I send my boyfriend a text, I'll put my phone down and I won't think about it again that he hasn't responded, right? If I do happen to think about that, I'll be like, oh, he's in a work meeting or he must have fallen asleep. And that's the end of it. When I get anxious someone who has an anxious attachment style may be like, oh my gosh, they haven't texted me back. They're mad at me. What did I do wrong? Is he going to break up with me? Like all those things, they make it about the relationship and they just need reassurance. And when you are anxious, you do need more reassurance. And so there's things where I've gone to him, I'm like, hey, I'm feeling a little anxious about this. This is what I need. So, but recognizing my attachment style has been really big too. Like, I know I'm mostly secure, but in this situation, I think I'm going to feel a little bit anxious. So let's talk about it ahead of time. This is what I hope would happen. And, you know, you do you, you have to be authentic to you. But as your partner, I'm expressing this need. And so, yeah, it's so good to, for me to recognize that. Oh, yeah. This is me and what I'm going to do.
Was he aware of attachment styles when you started dating?
Yeah, he's about growth. He knows a lot.
Yeah. You guys have been able to talk about attachment styles and how you attach. And yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it is really good. It's, I never had a conversation like that with my husband. I can tell you that. So yeah, it's really, yeah. And again, you don't want to label, because it is something that can be fluid, right? You can change, you can all move towards that desired secure style, but it does help understand things.
Yeah, exactly. And I totally agree 100%. It's not about labeling, but it's about understanding. It primarily comes from how you grew up.
Absolutely.
How you've been programmed. And I usually say, we are our past. We are programmed. It's kind of like a computer. It's like we program throughout our lives, but our first years are the most influential in our lives, which most people probably understand. And that you are influenced by how your home environment, etc.
Right. Attachment style is developed very early on as a child. And it's about your needs being met. If 70% of your needs are met 70% of the time, you're going to be a secure attached, because you know your needs are going to be met. Yeah. Then you get the different types. When your needs aren't met, you get the different way people react. The desire to connect is still there, but it's just, how do you react to it? The anxious will cry and be really clingy, whereas the avoidant will learn, oh, to be next to mom, I need to not express anything. So they just don't express it. The need's still there. So yeah, it's formed very early on, but it's interesting how it does carry into your romantic relationships.
Yeah. And if you guys are listening and want to learn more, you can go to the previous episode where we talked about attachment styles. And I think we need to do an update. I'm going to invite in Amber and Joseph or Ryan, and we'll do a group chat about it, because we all have been dating, you know, since that episode. So maybe we learned something.
It's true. That would be fun. There'd be some great updates.
Yeah. So let's see here. What else are we going to talk about? You know, co-parenting. And I don't know if it's something that you want to talk about, any tips. You know, both you and I have had very similar issues with co-parenting, pretty much non-existent. And I pretty much gave up. It wasn't possible to communicate. And it's definitely very important if you can communicate and to co-parent. And but I haven't beaten myself up about it. And I had a really good, strong relationship that's getting stronger. But I definitely have spent a lot of times connecting with my kids, taking that little extra time, sending a text. I love them just out of the blue. Yeah. Just making sure that they feel that they're very important in my life, or giving them a call, or going out for a date with them, et cetera.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Yeah, my co-parenting is non-existent as well, not much to my dismay. I wish it was so completely different, but there's still things that I can do. Like, one of the things they said that my kids said they appreciate that I do is, they're like, I don't say your dad, go talk to your dad. I'll be like, hey, you need to talk to dad about that. So yeah, it was for some reason that matters to them. And I'm like, well, that's easy, you know, like, yeah. So just that little, I don't know why that matters to them, but it does. And things like that, it hurt me for a long time that it wasn't there. And I, like you, had to give up. There's no hope of it anymore. It is what it is. You know, the thing is, I still show up as me. His mom died like a month or two ago. And I'm like, I spent 17 years calling her mom. And unfortunately, my relationship with her was non-existent after the divorce, because they couldn't handle it. They didn't know how to handle divorce. They didn't know how to handle the ball of emotion that I was. Anyway, so I just reached out and said, hey, I heard about your mom, and I am so sorry for the loss you and your family are experiencing. And like, we've had a lot of great memories, and that included your mom. And so, like, I just showed up as me, and he actually replied and responded well and kind, which was like probably the first nice interaction we've had in a very, very long time. And like things like that, even though it's not about the kids, any time you can have that positive interaction, I feel like is really good. But my kids are scared for us to be in the same room, which makes me really sad. I wish it wasn't that way.
Oh, wow.
But I can't beat myself up about it like you. I know I would want it so differently, but you know what I've learned? It takes two people to want it.
Yeah.
And so the person who cares the least has the most control. So it is what it is. And I mean, I've made sure my kids know that I wish it was different just because, I mean, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Maybe that's something wrong, but I'm like, I've really tried and I'm really sorry for the way this has impacted, because it's hard for your kids not to get caught in the middle when it's like that, I feel like.
Yeah.
And I was talking with someone else this weekend when I, over Thanksgiving, we were canyoneering and she and I were hiking and we had a really deep conversation. And I'm like, it's really hard when your needs don't meet with your needs as a person go against the needs of your child, right? And I can give a scenario if that would help you understand, but it's really challenging. And divorce brings that situation to your life. Whereas when you're a family unit, it seems like, you know, all your needs pretty much align because you're trying to build this unit. But here it's like, you have this family over here, we've got this over here. These needs don't align anymore.
Yeah, divorce can be very difficult, but time can also heal.
Yeah.
It's like, now it's 7 years and we've had several events. My oldest son got married in the spring. My kids have graduated and we've both been to the graduating ceremonies. We've been very amicable and friendly and communicating, and we both have that as a goal. We're still not friends, but we're very polite and amicable in all settings where we have sporting events, etc. And we've had that for the last few years, which I think is very nice.
Well, that's really great. I don't even have that. Like, yeah. I just get ignored. And so I think that that's really great for your children, because you know who wins? They're your children win. You can win in that situation. She wins. It's not full of animosity. I've had to tell my daughter, like, you don't understand, me being ignored is the same thing as if I was up in your face yelling. You would hate it. It's just not a way it's not kind. And so, and I'm a big believer in kindness. And so it's so great that, and I know it's still the bare minimum what you have. It would be better if there was, you know, but not everybody can do it. And I just have to accept and work with what I have.
Yeah. And I think we both have you know, looking at the kids, first of all, and see what is best for the kids. And to be able to, we're always going to have the kids together. We're always going to have possibly grandkids in the future.
Yeah.
To be able to have sporting events, etc. And to be able to be together at those events, marriages, etc. Mm-hmm. Without having tension. I think that's giving the kids a big, huge favor. And I also wrote an email to her. This is probably a year and a half ago. And as just said, because she seemed a little bit negative towards pretty much all our marriage. And I said, you know, I see most of our marriage as a success.
Wow.
It's because it's like we've been married for 20 years. And, you know, we have four beautiful kids. And we did have struggled the last probably 5 years of our marriage where we had quite a bit of struggle. But the first 15 years, we had so many amazing events. And just say, I value that. That is something that I really value. And then she came back and said, yeah, I do too. So,
oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah,
that's vulnerable. That was very vulnerable on your part. I commend you. That's really great.
So, no, it's definitely, and about vulnerability, it's something that I'm learning about. You know, before the divorce, I definitely struggle a lot with being vulnerable and real. And my counselor pretty much just told me, because I was dealing similar as you, and most people I've interviewed with depression, with suicidal thoughts, extreme loneliness, etc. And she just said, you need to reach out to a few of your friends and start sharing what you're going through. And to really... And it's beautiful to be able to be vulnerable, to be able to be you instead of having all these masks and pretending you have everything together.
Exactly. Yeah, I love that. I love that so much. I remember you talking about her telling you to do that before. And that was one of the things for you that made all the difference in your journey forward.
It was night and day.
Yeah. Having that is really critical, I think, into the success of creating your best life. After divorce is being able to do that.
Yeah, and to be able to share with a friend that you trust, and not to everybody, just a few people. And that's, yeah, you know, a couple of people that you also can feel that they can relate to you. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's people that have gone through divorce themselves, is my experience.
Unfortunately, it's true. Yeah. Loss is loss, but yeah, people who haven't been through it can't understand it. Just like I can't understand the loss of a child. I have not lost a child. And so I know that there's elements of that loss that I wouldn't understand. It's funny, when I first got divorced, I'm like, I don't know anyone who's divorced. And now I'm like, I don't know anyone who's married. Like, I mean, it's not really that way, but all my friends have been through divorce, and there's a huge community. And now though, I love it, because the way I met my boyfriend is, he runs a hiking group. We met on his hiking group. I met through that, because building a community on things that I love was what became important, not through divorce anymore. But hey, what do I love? What do I want to do? And so he created a hiking group called Daring Journey Adventures, and has so many plans. It's really fun to watch him in motion and create that community. And having those few friends make all the difference, I feel like.
I'll throw in the plug here. I teach a course about being present. It's a type of short meditations daily.
Oh, cool.
And to really learn how to get out of the mode of living in the past or being afraid of the future.
Absolutely.
Being able to click out like that anytime and just being present. That's truly an amazing tool to be able to do that. And I think a lot of people struggle with that, to be able to truly be present. And that can be in a conversation like you and I. Let's say you have two friends talking, and somehow you start thinking about what you're going to say next instead of thinking about what you're saying. Or maybe you're thinking about something totally different. You're not being present. That's exactly the tools that we teach on this training. It's a 6-week training.
Oh, wow.
And anybody listening can click on the link below and get more information. You know, I have the course start once a month. Yeah, just going towards the end of the podcast, you know, having friends for me was crucial, to have those friends that cared when I reached out. And I'm going to ask you the same question as I asked last time. Now you're a little bit further down the road in this journey. And for people that are listening to the podcast, and they might just starting this journey of divorce, what are the most important things to think about going through the divorce?
Oh, that's such a good question. When I was first getting divorced, well, first, the thing to know is it's a process, not an event. And to give yourself the most grace and mercy that you can give to anyone, because this is hard. And you deserve that from yourself. You're going to make mistakes through this process. I mean, I shared some of mine earlier on in our discussion today. You will make mistakes. Are you doing your best? 1,000% you are. You still make mistakes. So please have mercy and grace to yourself. It's a process, not an event. And the thing that I hated being told, but I really need to tell it, is it gets better. I hated hearing that, because I did not believe it. I was in so much pain and never thought that pain would diminish and go away, but it has. And I really cringed when people said I hated that so much, but it's the truth. And the last podcast, we talked about creating your life. And that's what I've done successfully, and you've done it. And it's beautiful to see. I love your posts, you know, when I see them, and I get to choose what my life looks like now. And it's full of silliness and fun and adventure and connection and meaningful and vulnerability. And that's what I thrive on. And I've created that with my people, and it's amazing.
Yeah, that's so nice to hear that your journey is going, has an upward trajectory. That is beautiful. And when you start getting traction too on that journey, you start getting more, I guess, it's the first steps. A lot of times that's the most difficult.
Yes.
When you're sitting by yourself in the apartment and you're just by yourself and you don't want to do anything, but to just get out the door, to take those first steps, reaching out to a friend, just sharing this is difficult, or joining a group, a church to help, you know, a divorce group, or whatever step you need to take, and maybe ask a family or a friend to help you along this journey. To do it yourself, as you should say, that's impossible. You have to reach out to get some people around you to support you.
Absolutely. And if you're in the throes of divorce or of that depression and you're laying in your bed, just go to the living room, get a change of scenery. If that's all you can do, do that. It starts with those baby steps. Those small steps sometimes lead to the bigger things. And it took me a while. I mean, honestly, it took me longer than I care to admit, but there's things out there. There's things yet to be. And I think you and I are roughly the same age. And I'm at 51 years old. I'm learning how to canyoneer. Like, yeah. Oh my goodness, this is amazing. Yeah. I would never have thought in the beginning of my divorce, I would be out in some of the places I'm doing and venturing where I'm adventuring. But man, is it exciting and exhilarating and fearful at the same time. You know, I feel like so alive when I'm doing that, because it's just like, wow.
We talked about that before, to create new habits or new things that you love to do. You know, I started playing tennis. This is now 3.5 years ago. I actually played tennis in high school, but then I stopped for 30 years and picked it up 3.5 years ago. And I love it. I love the community. I call it my people.
Yes.
It's like lots of people. And also in my church, we have a Bible study or a life group, we call it, where we get together. Those are the two spots where I have my people. And I think to start creating that, if it's rock climbing or canyoneering, or if it's pickleball or whatever. I know you play pickleball.
Yeah, have you played? I was going to ask you if you played yet.
Yeah, I played about probably 10, 15 times.
Nice.
So no, to find a few things, and this is on this journey, really try to find things and where you can connect with other people. And that's, pickleball is an excellent way to find other people, because you can, a lot of times you can go there by yourself, and then a lot of places, pickleball places, has a rack, and you just put your racket in there, and then when you have four people, you just start playing. That's what they have nearby here, and the courts are full all the time.
Yep. Yeah, it's so true. It is so true. Whatever you like, do that.
Yeah.
If it's quilting, if it's playing basketball, whatever it is, do something.
Yeah.
It really helps. It really helps.
Hey, Tiracy, this has been a pleasure. Always is. And I'd love to do an update on our attachment styles as a group. I'm going to reach out to the rest of the gang and see if we can get together and chat about the attachment styles and see what we've learned when we've started to date.
I love it. I think that would be fantastic.
That would be fun. But thanks again. It'll be awesome.
Thank you so much.